Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by for Balt Group AGM. I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Chairman Graham Bradley. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. It's now 11 o'clock here in Sydney, and it's time to commence our meeting. I'm Graham Bradley, and as Chairman of the Board, it's my pleasure to welcome you to the 2021 Annual General Meeting of United Malt Group Limited. This is our first annual general meeting since listing on the Australian Stock Exchange almost a year ago in March of last year. Our company secretary informs me that we have a quorum of shareholders present. Therefore, I would like to formally open the United Malt Group's annual general meeting for the financial year ended 30 September 2020. The notice of meeting was made available to all shareholders prior to today, and I will take it as read. On behalf of the company and the board, I would like to thank you for your interest in the company and your participation this morning. While we had hoped that we would be able to hold our AGM in the manner that would offer the best opportunity for our shareholders and directors to meet in one location, due to the unprecedented nature of the COVID pandemic and to ensure the safety of our shareholders, of our people and our community, we're holding our AGM today as a virtual event. Before I move to the formal introductions, on behalf of the company, I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands across Australia and pay our respects to their elders past and present. I'd like now to introduce our board of directors and outline how they and other participants are joining the meeting today. Our Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer Mark Palmquist and Non-Executive Director Gary Mize are joining us remotely from the United States. Some of our Australian-based directors are also joining us remotely from various locations in Victoria and New South Wales. I welcome Jane McAloon, who chairs our Nominations Remuneration Committee and is a member of the Audit and Risk Committee. Also welcome to Barbara Gibson, who chairs our Environment, Health and Safety Committee and is a member of our Audit and Risk Committee. And also Simon Tregoning, who's a member of our Nominations and Remuneration Committee and our Environment, Health and Safety Committees. They're all joining remotely today. Joining me here in Sydney is my colleague Terry Williamson, who chairs our Audit and Risk Committee and is a member of the Environment, Health and Safety Committee, and also our Company Secretary, Lisa Jones. Also joining us today are our external auditors, PricewaterhouseCoopers, and from them, Kristen Stubbins is joining us remotely, and Brent Etversol is here with us in Sydney, along with representatives of Link Market Services, our share registry provider, and John Williamson Noble from Gilbert and Tobin, our external legal advisors. Welcome also to members of the company's executive team who are here, and representatives also of KPMG, our internal audit advisors who joined this audio cast today. Now, before we commence the official business of the meeting, I would like to outline some procedural and technical matters associated with this virtual AGM. The virtual meeting guide has been lodged with the ASX and is available on the company's website. If you've had if you have any technical difficulties participating via the online platform, please call the helpline number, which is shown at the top of the screen, or call the number shown in the guide. If you do experience any technical issues today, if we do, a short recess or adjournment may, depending on the number of shareholders affected. And if this occurs, I will advise you accordingly. But if I'm unable to do so because of technical issues, to do so directly, an announcement will be made via the ASX announcement platform with details of any adjournment. Hopefully that won't be necessary. Should you have any difficulties viewing the presentations that we're going to make in today's meeting, I can confirm that these were lodged earlier this morning via the ASX announcements platform and can be accessed on the ASX website. On the online platform, there are two icons. These allow you to ask a written question online and also allow you to vote on the resolutions before our meeting. You can also download our 2020 annual report and the AGM notice of meeting by clicking on the download button at the bottom right corner of your screen. Now, how do you ask questions at this meeting? If you did not submit your questions prior to the meeting and you'd like to do so during the meeting, you may type your questions into the online platform by clicking on Ask a Question at any time during the meeting. Please select from the drop-down menu the item of business your question pertains to and submit each question individually. We encourage you to please submit your questions as soon as possible rather than waiting for the relevant item of business, and our company secretary will read questions out when we come to the relevant item of business. It's important that comments and questions are succinct, of course, and restricted to the subject matter of the business and resolutions set out in the notice of meeting. If your question pertains to an item of business already discussed, when we receive your question, we'll respond to it at the conclusion of the formal business. If your question is a detailed one and we're not able to respond to all questions for some reason, we may respond to you following the meeting. We may also choose to moderate or consolidate questions if we receive a number of similar questions on a single topic. Next, I'd like to set out the voting procedures for our meeting today. Voting on each resolution will be determined by way of a poll conducted by Link Market Services. Shareholders have the option to submit a direct vote or appoint a proxy. All valid proxies have been received within the prescribed time limits have been admitted, and we'll be displaying the proxy and direct voting results when we get to each resolution. You may obtain a voting card by clicking on the Get a Voting Card box at the top or bottom of your screen. You will be asked to provide your shareholder identification details. The voting card will pop up and set out each of the resolutions. You'll be able to select either the full or partial vote tab. For each of the resolutions, simply allocate your votes against one of the options, for, against, or abstain. When you're finished, please make sure your votes are submitted by clicking on the Submit Vote or Submit Partial Votes buttons at the bottom of your voting card. You can close your voting card without submitting, and you can change your vote during the meeting by reopening your voting card. Votes can be submitted any time from now until the poll closes. If you have appointed a proxy to vote at this meeting, there is no need for you to vote, as your proxy will vote on your behalf unless you wish to change your vote. Details of the proxy votes cast during prior to the meeting in relation to each resolution, as I said, will be displayed following questions which we may receive on each of the resolutions. Votes cast during the meeting will be counted by Link after the meeting concludes. The results of all voting will be announced to the ASX after the meeting as soon as they become available. I confirm that as chairman of the meeting, where I am appointed as proxy with discretion as to how to vote as proxy holder, I intend to vote all shares in favour of all resolutions at this meeting today. For the convenience of those who wish to leave the meeting early, I now declare the poll open. So, I'd like now to outline the format for our meeting. I will first give a short address on the year that's passed, and this will be followed by an address by our Managing Director, Mark Palmquist. Mark will speak about the FY20 financial performance and provide a brief update on the company's strategic priorities and on our immediate outlook. We will then move to the formal items on the agenda and consider the resolutions set out in the notice of meeting. I encourage shareholders to send through any questions you may have as soon as possible so that we have time to ensure questions are received and read out at the appropriate time during our meeting. So, I'll now move to my report. It's my pleasure to present a short report on the progress of the company at this, our first annual general meeting for the company since it became an independent listed company on the 23rd of March 2020. It would be an understatement to say that our first 11 months has been an extraordinary period for our company, for our people, for our customers, and of course, for all the world. I'd like to acknowledge at the outset of my report the board's sincere appreciation for the magnificent way in which our management team and our employees around the world have adapted to unprecedented disruptions and to the challenges resulting from the COVID pandemic. Not only has our management team been busy putting in place the necessary procedures, policies, and operational arrangements for our new life as a listed company, they have also had to deal with the very real effects of the pandemic on our people and on our operations, and of course on our customers. In all of this, they have done a commendable job in keeping our people safe and continuing to supply our customers with minimal disruptions under very difficult circumstances. Let me also acknowledge and thank all employees across the company for their dedication and hard work during a challenging year. I'll turn now to our FY20 financial results. Now, in discussing our financial results for the year to 30 September 2020, it's necessary to consider the full year performance of United Malt's business, including the performance of the malt division of GrainCorp during the first half of this financial year. The group's full year revenues for the year to 30 September were $1,289 million, which is 2% down on the prior year. Full year underlying earnings before interest, tax, depreciation and amortization for the group after the application of the new accounting standard AASB 16, including the first half as a division of GrainCorp, was $156.1 million, which is down 11% compared to the $175.5 million, which was achieved in FY19. Removing the impact of AASB 16 for the full year in 2020, underlying EBITDA would have been $143.5 million, which is down 18% on the prior year. In the second half of the year, that is the period affected by COVID up to 30 September 2020, the underlying EBITDA was $78.2 million, which is down 24% on the prior corresponding period. The group's underlying net profit after tax for the half year to 30 September was $29.1 million. It was, of course, a year of two halves. After a solid first half, both product volumes shipped and revenues were negatively impacted by the closure of on-premise dining and in most of the group's key markets in North America, the United Kingdom, Asia, and of course in Australia as well. We are not yet out of the woods, however, in relation to the impact of the pandemic on our business. And so we expect continued adverse impacts on our sales and revenues through FY21. I'll comment now on our dividend. Notwithstanding the uncertain outlook we continue to face this financial year, the board resolved last November to pay a dividend of 3.9 cents per share, which represented a payout ratio of 40% of our after-tax profit for that second half of the year. Our intention in future periods will be to distribute approximately 60% of underlying net profit after tax. Our aim will be, subject always, of course, to trading conditions, to provide shareholders with increased dividends as our profits grow. I want to turn now to the share placement, which we undertook in May of 2020. The board undertook the placement of shares to institutional investors to raise $140 million, coupled with a shareholder purchase plan, which raised a further $30.6 million, and both components of this capital raising were oversubscribed. The equity raising was undertaken to strengthen the group's balance sheet against possible reduced revenues and increased costs resulting from the COVID crisis at a time of heightened uncertainty about the trajectory of return to normal trading conditions. The capital raising also aimed to ensure that we were in a position to progress our strategic investment priorities and to pursue new opportunities, while maintaining our leverage also within our target range of 2 to 2.5 times net debt to underlying earnings before interest, tax and depreciation. As a result of the capital raising, our leverage ratio stood at 1.7 times as at 30 September 2020. But as we move into the second half of the financial year, when we typically build up our barley inventories and increase our working capital usage, we anticipate that our leverage will be within our target range, 2 to 2.5 times, by March of 2021. We gratefully acknowledge the support of our shareholders for the placement and the share purchase plan. I'd now like to comment briefly on sustainability. The board and management continue to focus on improving sustainability across all of our operations, including maintaining a safe working environment for our people and our customers and others with whom we do business, contributing as good corporate citizens to the communities in which we operate, and minimising our impact on the physical environment through careful management and use of energy and water resources. Maintaining the safety and quality of our product is all important to us. Our sustainability initiatives are set out in more detail in our 2020 sustainability report, which is published on our website. Now turning to outlook. Despite the near-term prospects of continued market disruptions during FY21, the board and management are excited about the medium to longer-term opportunities that lie ahead for United Malt. We are the world's fourth largest commercial maltster, and we provide high-quality products and service to our brewing, distilling, and food manufacturing customers around the world. We have continued during the past year with the expansion of our production facilities at Arbroath and Inverness in Scotland to serve the expanding demand from our Scotch whisky customers. We are progressing also the replacement of a major kiln at our Perth malting plant in Western Australia. We've entered into a new joint venture to distribute our products in Mexico, a growing market in which we are underrepresented. We have numerous value-accretive facilities upgrades and operational improvement projects in active planning, and we have a strong balance sheet to fund these investments. We are also undertaking a number of internal improvement projects that will streamline our global operations and strengthen our competitive position for the medium term. I'll now turn to board matters. I'd like to thank my board colleagues for their terrific contribution during the past year. I want to take this opportunity in particular to say a sincere thanks to Simon Tregoning for his service as a director of United Malt during our formative year, but also to acknowledge his contribution to the business as a director of GrainCorp, where he served for over 10 years. Simon will retire at the close of this meeting today, and we thank him for his contribution. I also welcome our newly appointed US-based director, Gary Myers, to the board. Gary is standing for election later in this meeting. We're delighted to have him bring his wealth of relevant industry experience to our boardroom. Lastly, may I thank all shareholders for their continued support for United Malt. We look forward to reporting our half-year progress to you in mid-May. And ladies and gentlemen, that concludes my report, and I'll now ask the Managing Director, Mark Palmquist, to present his report. Mark.
Thank you, Graham, and good morning, everyone. I appreciate you joining us today for our first AGM. It's been an extraordinary year for our business, our industry, and many of the markets in which we operate. At the same time as establishing United Malt as its own separate publicly listed company on the 23rd of March, the COVID-19 pandemic first began to impact the globe. The pandemic has tested the resilience of our business model, our people, and our ability to respond to challenges while maintaining a clear focus on our key priorities, keeping our employees safe, serving our customers, and creating shareholder value. I'd like to thank our staff for their efforts in responding to the challenge of managing the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic whilst establishing our business as a separately listed company and putting in place all the policies, procedures, separation activities that have been completed during the course of 2020. Just a few comments on safety. Our focus on safety remains paramount. We responded quickly in adjusting our ways of working to ensure our safety practices were fit for purpose. Social distancing protocols, split shifts, enhanced hygiene measures were implemented across our processing and warehousing operations while we transitioned our office-based teams to working from home arrangements. Our efforts have allowed us to continue to provide uninterrupted service to our customers and ensure a safe working environment for our employees, suppliers, and customers. Once again, let me acknowledge the efforts of our people right across our network for stepping up and meeting these challenges during the year. During FY20, we made continued progress in implementing our safety strategy, which is focused on site leadership and behavioral aspects of safety, as well as identifying and mitigating physical risks on site. The recordable injury frequency rate for FY20 was 1.45, an improvement from 1.54 in the prior year. We also recognize that conducting our business in a sustainable and responsible way is vital for us to earn and maintain the ongoing respect of our stakeholders, including our people, customers, supply partners, shareholders, and the communities in which we operate. We're very pleased to have been able to publish our inaugural sustainability report in 2020. I would encourage shareholders to review our report, which you can find on our website. We continue to work with internal and external stakeholders to identify and further develop our strategy to address key sustainability risks and opportunities. We understand that we have to play our part in reducing our environmental impact in operations. Energy is one of our key inputs, and we look to reduce our emissions. We're also a large user of water, so we're looking for opportunities to reduce our water consumption across our operations. Another part of our sustainability focus is promoting a diverse and inclusive workplace. We have a strong culture which is supported by our policies, and we have found that having a diverse and inclusive workforce assists our decision making. Now turning to the FY20 financial performance. Our financial performance in this period was impacted in the second half of the year by COVID-19 pandemic. Government-imposed containment restrictions adversely affected on-premise alcohol consumption, particularly for our smaller craft beer customers. While on-premise consumption increased, this was not sufficient to offset the decline in on-premise consumption. We took steps to mitigate the impact of lower demand with the implementation of one-off cost-saving initiatives in the second half of FY20. Direct cost savings of $5.9 million were realized from areas including a 20% base fee reduction for the non-executive directors from May to September, the executive team and many employees reducing their base pay by 20% for 5 months by taking the equivalent in leave or salary reduction. We also reduced costs in marketing, training, and non-essential spending areas. A further $4.4 million in government wage support schemes was accessed in Canada, UK, and New Zealand, which enabled us to maintain staff who would otherwise have been furloughed. No government wage assistance was received in Australia or in the US. The impact on volume caused a decline in group revenue of 2% to $1.3 billion. Underlying EBITDA was $156.1 million. Including the impact of the new lease accounting standard AASB 16, down 11% in the prior year. Notwithstanding the decline in EBITDA, we remained operating cash flow positive for the year. The group successfully completed a $170.6 million equity raise in May 2020, which comprised an institutional placement of $140 million and a share purchase plan of $30.6 million. I would like to acknowledge shareholder support of this capital raising. As Graham mentioned, a dividend of 3.9 cents per share was paid, representing a payout ratio of 40% of after-tax profit for the second half of FY20. United Malt remains in a strong financial position to manage in the current environment and to continue our investment in strategic initiatives. Moving on to strategy, we are continuing to implement our strategic objectives while also ensuring we're well positioned to manage the continued near-term volatility caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. Our strategy is focused across a number of key priorities, allowing us to remain agile, keep our customers at the center of everything we do, whilst targeting those markets where the longer-term outlook for growth remains supportive. Firstly, we are committed to being the supplier of choice for our customers by delivering on our customer experience and value by providing exceptional service and simpler processes. Secondly, we are investing in United Malt's digital capabilities. We see data and insights as a core source of value and competitive strength. We continue to enhance our capabilities with digital insights in the warehouse and distribution business, allowing us to be more predictive with how we approach and service our customers. We have successfully delivered a new customer relationship system and a transport management system. Just some comments on our Scottish expansion. Thirdly, we continue to invest in our assets to create best-in-class operations as we seek to improve our portfolio of assets. Our product quality, our environmental footprint, and our profitability. Our expansion in Scotland, which is focused on the distilling market, continues to progress, with the Arbroath facility successfully coming online earlier this month with the addition of 22,000 metric tons of production. As part of the completion of Arbroath, we announced the intended closure of our Grantham facility in England, thereby removing an older and less efficient capacity from our portfolio of assets. Production will be consolidated into our Woodham facility in England and the Arbroath facility in Scotland, providing greater asset utilization, lower production cost per ton, while ensuring uninterrupted supply to our customers. We are progressing the Inverness expansion amidst the continued disruption from COVID-19 restrictions in Scotland. The facility will add 57,000 metric tons of capacity. Due to increased social distancing requirements on site, we now expect that completion of the expansion project will be delayed to May 2022 from the original schedule of end of calendar year 2021. This Scottish expansion remains a key customer-led strategic priority as we capture the growth and increasing demand for Scottish malt as our Scottish distillers' customers seek to capture the growth markets for aged single malt whiskey. Meanwhile, in Australia, we announced a $27 million replacement of our Perth kiln, providing safety and efficiency benefits and the opportunity to expand capacity with further capital investment. We have expanded our partnership with our Mexican distribution partner to further grow United Malt's penetration into the region. The new agreement will expand our distribution footprint, provide further access to the growing craft market in Mexico, enhance our customer experience, and provide more efficient logistics. Finally, we're working towards transforming our business and renewing our organization and technology platforms to create a simplified, more efficient, and effective organization. We're currently progressing the initial stages of this project and expect to be able to provide more clarity on the benefits we expect to drive from this initiative at the half-year results in May. We are confident that our strategic focus will deliver benefits to shareholders over the longer term. Now turning to FY21 outlook, in line with comments made at the FY20 results announcement, United Malt remains well positioned to manage through the continued market uncertainty caused by the impact of COVID-19, which is expected to remain through FY21. While signs of recovery have emerged in some markets, the impact of COVID-19 and the second and third waves that are currently being experienced in our core markets, including the U.S., Canada, and U.K., continue to disrupt our demand, our supply chains, and our operations. This includes the current stringent lockdowns in the U.K. and continued increase in case numbers and varied restrictions in the U.S. and Canada. Volumes continue to be impacted by COVID-19 restrictions in core markets, with continued reductions in on-premise consumption, shifting malt product demand, and driving a lower margin outcome. Social distancing, hygiene priorities are continuing to drive elevated operating costs. Additionally, containerized exports globally have been significantly disrupted by the pandemic, causing delays in our customer shipments. To deal with these delays, we have periodically paused production at selected plants to mitigate the shortfall of containers and vessel availability. The appreciation in the Australian dollar compared to the prior corresponding period, moving from an average rate of 67 cents in the first half of FY20 to the U.S. dollar to an average rate of 75 cents year-to-date in the first half of 21, will impact the translation of our earnings into Australian dollars. We expect this to have a negative impact of approximately $6 million in the first half of FY21. As previously advised, corporate costs are expected to be $12 million for FY21, representing full-year standalone company corporate costs post the demerger from GrainCorp and reflecting the increase in insurance costs. As part of our program to accelerate the creation of a simplified and more efficient organization, we will incur an additional $5 million of expense in the first half of FY21. This will be supporting the development of projects that underpin this transformation. This cost is fully contained within the first half, and we expect future implementation costs to be offset by benefits delivered in the second half of FY21 and beyond. We will provide further details on the benefits, and this will be delivered at the first half results. As announced earlier this month, our Grantham facility in England was shut in and will close in March of 2021, and production from this site will consolidate into our Wydham and Arbroath facilities. This will provide greater asset utilization and lower production costs per ton while ensuring uninterrupted supply to customers. We expect to incur a non-cash impairment of $2 million, together with site redundancy costs of approximately $1 million in the first half of 21. We continue to expect COVID-19 conditions to remain throughout FY21, and for the first half 21, expect EBITDA to be within the range of $47 million to $50 million on a Pulse AASB 16 basis, which again includes the impact of the Grantham closure costs, the foreign exchange impact, and the business transformation costs, as I just outlined. While conditions remain uncertain for the second half of 21, we do remain cautiously optimistic for a recovery in malt demand. Typically, we see stronger trading conditions in the second half as we move into the Northern Hemisphere summer, with a pre-COVID seasonal earnings split of 40% first half and 60% second half. In addition, we look to the rollout of vaccines in our key markets and our customers being more resilient in how they access the end consumer. Our strong position, strategically located malting assets, and our market-leading distribution platform positions us to return to growth once conditions stabilize. Let me conclude by once again thanking shareholders for your support of the company. We remain well-placed to manage through the current environment with a strong focus on our strategy to deliver value creation to shareholders over the medium term. With that, I'll now hand back to Graham.
Thank you, Mark, for that report. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we'll now welcome questions or comments from shareholders on my report or Mark's report. And I understand that we do have a couple of questions that have come in.
Yes, Chair, that's right. We do have a couple of questions. The first question is from Edmund Carew. Could you please provide more detail about trading in each of the United Kingdom, the United States, Canada, and Australia? What is the trading outlook as we move forward? Disappeared from the screen.
Sorry.
Apologies, the question's just disappeared from the screen. I'll go to the next question.
We're just about there.
Okay. Yes, I'll start the question again. Could you please provide more detail about trading in each of the United Kingdom, the United States, Canada, and Australia? What is the trading outlook as we move forward for each of these four nations? Are there any greener shoots elsewhere, such as parts of Asia, that United Malt is able to take advantage of, and if so, where?
Well, thank you, Mr. Crew, for that question. I think as Mark has outlined in his address, we do continue to face, you know, some significant uncertainties, particularly in our major markets in North America and the UK. I'm going to ask Mark to make some further comments, though, in relation to where we are seeing the greener shoots. We're clearly seeing a greater opening up in Australia at the moment, and we've got our fingers crossed that will continue. Mark, would you like to add a comment to your already your report on outlook, please?
Yeah, absolutely, Graham. So we're going through this rolling process of COVID-19 restrictions, and so that's really where the impact is for us. Just talking with our people in the UK this morning, and they're starting to see rates come down actually quite well, down about 42% is what they're saying this morning, and looking at restrictions to start coming off in mid-March. But again, that's all subject to any changes that are going on. In Canada, we're seeing very similar restrictions as we're seeing in the U.S. And again, it depends upon the province in Canada or the states in the U.S. The difference that we have seen this time around in the second, third waves is really revolving around different regions in the U.S. It's affected more the southern part, the western part, California in particular, which is a good market for us. And so that's where the disruption has come. The trading aspects, though, inside of it is that we still see opportunities with the craft business, when it can get packaged and work its way onto the shelf, we're seeing good uptake. So it's that on-premise aspect that's really creating more of the issues for us, and we look for that to help and improve. I think the last part was greener shoots in other areas. Asian market is a place in where we do a lot of business today, but it's also a growing population, and it's a growing economy, so that the per capita GDP is growing, and particularly for Southeast Asia, it's a very good place for us. We're able to originate either out of Australia or out of Canada, and really effectively go after that market. So that's another area of concentration for us. Thanks, Grant.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you. Lisa, we have another question.
Chair, we have a question from Elizabeth Fish, representing the Australian Shareholders Association. What was the additional cost to United Malt in the 2020 financial year of being a standalone company?
Yes, so I think that was mentioned in Mark's address. We estimate about $12 million is the cost of a standalone on a full-year basis. And that, regrettably, in this year has included a material increase in insurance costs that have impacted on our overheads. But that's the answer to your question, Elizabeth. Another question?
Yes, we have another question from Edmund Carew. Why are there so many directors rather than just, say, a tighter and less expensive team of four? Why haven't any directors and the CEO and senior management taken a pay cut given the business's poor performance? Why don't any of the directors have business experience in the United States, Canada, and the United Kingdom that are the company's main markets, rather than Australia that only accounts for 7% of United Malt's revenues?
Again, thank you, Mr. Carew, for that question. I'll provide a response to you. When we demerged from GrainCorp, GrainCorp had 8 and at various times 9 non-executive directors. We agreed that, and we stated in our scheme booklet that we would reduce the size of the United Malt board to what we thought was a more efficient and efficient and effective number. And we will be, when Simon retires at the end of this meeting, and assuming Gary is re-elected, we will have 5 non-executive directors. I think for an ASX 200 company, this is would be considered to be a pretty lean board. But in deciding what the right size of a board is, you always need to take into account the mix of skills and the need for these days in particular to have the right skills on the important committees that serve the board in relation to things like environment, health and safety, audit and risk, of course, and the all-important remuneration committee. So I think we have a good balance in the directors we now have on the company, a balance of experience and knowledge and ability to lead the important corporate governance functions that the board carries out, including the committees. I would add that many of our directors do in fact have material experience in serving on companies that do a business in the United States, Canada, and the UK. I do myself. I've chaired a number of companies that operate in the United States, even though they're listed in Australia. So I think all of those factors come to play in deciding the right size of the board. And I would say at the moment the board is very comfortable that 5 non-executive directors is about the right size for the board. Thank you. Any more questions?
No further questions.
All right, well, thank you for those questions. If there are no other questions, I would like to move to the formal items of business for this meeting. As set out in the notice of meeting and the explanatory memorandum, there are 6 items of business before the meeting today. Each resolution is set out in the notice of meeting is to be considered as an ordinary resolution and as such must be approved by a simple majority of votes cast by shareholders entitled to vote on the resolution. Each item of business will be considered separately. There's a list of those 6 items on the screen now. I will firstly outline the resolution. I will then respond to any questions that are submitted by shareholders. We'll then display the votes lodged prior to the meeting in relation to those resolutions. So So the first item of business is to receive and consider the company's financial statements for the year ended 30 September 2020, as well as the report of the directors and auditors. As no resolution is required, there will be no voting on this item of business. Kristen Stubbins from PwC, who audited the accounts for the financial year, is present on the line and is available to answer questions relevant to the conduct of the audit and the preparation and content of the auditor's report, should any shareholders have questions in that regard. So pausing now, would anyone like to ask any questions relating to the financial statements and reports of the directors or the auditors? Are there any questions online?
No, there are no questions, Chair.
No questions have been submitted on this item. That being the case, I declare the reports have been received and we'll move to the items of business that do require formal resolutions. The next item is item two. It is the adoption of the remuneration report. Item two is an advisory non-binding resolution, and it's required by the Corporations Act in relation to the adoption of the remuneration report, which forms part of United Malt's first annual report released on the 18th of November 2020. The remuneration report was set out on pages 34 to 45 of the 2020 annual report, and it provides the information concerning executive and director remuneration. Now, before proceeding to the poll on this resolution, I'd like to make a few brief remarks about the company's remuneration policies and highlight some important factors which the board considered in arriving at what we believe were fair and reasonable remuneration outcomes for FY20. First, in this extraordinary year of disruption, our management team worked, as I've said, very hard and very effectively to establish the company as a standalone listed company with all the necessary policies, procedures, and so on required for good governance. This involved all of our senior management and the board intensively in the first half of 2020. In the second half of the year, our team managed the safety of our people and the continuity of our business very effectively in the face of COVID and achieved some important improvements in our business, including enhanced customer satisfaction despite the challenges in our supply chain. We also progressed important capital projects, as Mark has outlined, and laid the groundwork for future cost efficiency and profit improvement initiatives. I should add, and probably should have mentioned this in response to Mr. Crewe's question earlier, that our senior executives and the board reduced their salaries and board fees by 20% for the 5 months to the end of September in recognition of the challenges to the company during the early stage of the COVID pandemic. The second point I'd make is that while financial targets were not met, many non-financial targets were achieved, and accordingly the board has awarded moderate short-term incentive awards for the past year to our senior executives, commensurate, we believe, with their achievements. In doing so, the board chose not to exercise a discretion to increase or decrease those awards, but assessed our executives strictly according to the targets that were set, even though those targets were set well before the onset of the COVID pandemic. Acknowledging, however, that financial targets were not achieved, the board determined that all short-term incentive awards for our key executives should be made not in cash, but in company shares with deferred vesting. Under our newly adopted policies, our key executives are required to accumulate over a five-year period shares to the value of 1x their base salaries and 2x in the case of the CEO, so that any shares awarded under short or long-term incentive plans can only be sold to pay appropriate tax until those minimum required ownership levels are achieved. And the third point I'd make is that as a newly established company, focused on growing our value of our international business, the board has set a number of important strategic objectives for our leadership team to achieve over the next 3 years. In order to provide an incentive for management to achieve those objectives, we've included a strategic execution hurdle amongst the objectives in our FY21 long-term incentive plan. This hurdle will be at the level of 25%, and accordingly, we've reduced the absolute total shareholder return objective from 50 to 25%. Standing behind the strategic execution objectives are a series of largely quantified measures over the next 1, 2, and 3 years, against which management performance will be assessed at the end of the three-year period. Other than the change in that long-term incentive plan that I've just mentioned, our remuneration policies are broadly in line with those we inherited from GrainCorp, as we believe these policies are wholly consistent with good remuneration practices in Australia. And in fact, they've received very strong endorsement from GrainCorp shareholders over most recent years. Our policies, in a number of minor ways, have been adapted to the situation of our worldwide executive team and taken into account local policies and differences in tax regimes. So with those brief remarks, I will call for any questions in relation to this non-binding vote on the FY20 remuneration report. Lisa, are there any questions?
There are no questions.
There being no questions, then, or comments, I will now show the the proxies lodged in relation to this motion, and they're shown on the screen. Shareholders are encouraged to vote on this if you haven't done so already. But you'll see from the proxies cast that 91% or thereabouts have voted in favour of this resolution, with just under 9% voted against, based on the proxies and direct votes. So, noting that outcome, we will now continue to the next item of business. Now, the next item of business, it's my pleasure to propose a resolution to elect Gary Mize to the board. We were delighted to welcome Gary as a non-executive director in October last year, and of course he must stand for re-election at this, the first AGM since his appointment. Details of Gary's skills and experience are included in the notice of meeting, but I'll now invite Gary to say a few words to address the meeting. Gary.
Thank you, Graham. And thanks for the opportunity to stand for election to the United Malls Group Board of Directors. As you can see from the notice of meeting, I've spent my career in agribusiness and more recently in board duties in the U.S. and Canada. During my professional career, I spent 23 years with Cargill in various roles in their trading and processing businesses. During that time, I spent several years in Geneva, Switzerland, and 5 years in Sao Paulo, Brazil, where I led Cargill's global juice concentrate business and managed the portfolio of soft commodities, coffee, cocoa, sugar, and cotton. After Cargill, I was brought on as the CEO of the predecessor company of United Malt Group, which at the time was a joint venture between Conagra Malt and Tiger Brands out of South Africa. Later, I became a full-time executive of Conagra and managed their portfolio of grain processing businesses, namely flour milling, oat milling, corn milling, in addition to the malt company. I remain interested and involved in the malt industry since then, and am pleased to have the opportunity to possibly return. After Conagra, I was chief operating officer and board director of the Noble Group in Hong Kong. My time in Hong Kong ended in 2006, and I repatriated to the Western U.S., where my wife and I split our time between Arizona and Washington State, just outside of Seattle. I was really pleased when I was contacted by Mark and Graham to possibly join the UMG board. The challenges facing this industry are quite unique given the various implications of COVID. And I'm honored to place my name forward before shareholders for your consideration. And I thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Gary. The resolution, ladies and gentlemen, is shown on the screen. And I think you can see from Gary's comments how excited we were to get someone with his deep knowledge and experience in our industry and our sector, as well as his broad international experience in markets with which we in which we are involved or which we are interested in pursuing. So, ladies and gentlemen, the non-executive directors, other than Gary, unanimously recommend that the shareholders vote in favour of this resolution. I'm happy to answer any questions in relation to it, but are there any questions?
Chair, we have no questions on this item.
All right, thank you very much. The proxies votes on and direct votes on this item are shown on the screen, and as you can see, Gary has received nearly 99% votes in favour of in relation to those proxies and direct votes. So, thank you. We'll move to the next item of business. Which is item four, and this is the appointment of PwC, PricewaterhouseCoopers, as the company's director. Now, the PwC have been nominated by the chairman of our Audit and Risk Committee, Terry Williamson, who is also a member of the company, as required by the Corporations Act. And this is a resolution which is shown on the screen now, and it is required because this is the first year in which we are a newly listed company, and therefore shareholders must approve the appointment of the auditor. A copy of Mr. Terry Williamson's nomination letter was contained in the notice of meeting. In addition, I can confirm that PwC are qualified and have consented in writing to act in the capacity of auditor of the company. So you see the resolution is set out in the screen. I won't read it, but are there any questions or comments in relation to this resolution?
No questions.
There being no questions, then I will show the details of the proxies lodged in relation to this motion. And again, as you can see, this has received almost 100% vote in favour on the proxies. So thank you for that. We will move on to the next item of business, which is item five. Now, this item relates to the grant of long-term incentive awards in respect of FY21, the current financial year, to the company's Chief Executive Officer, Mark Palmquist. The proposal is to grant Mr. Palmquist performance rights under the company's employee incentive plan, which will vest upon satisfaction of the performance conditions over the three-year period commencing the 1st of October 2020 and ending 30 September 2023. This is a normal annual element in the CEO's remuneration package. The LTI award under the employee incentive plan aimed to focus on repositioning the business for growth and robust financial performance. The performance conditions were detailed in the explanatory memorandum to the notice of meeting. The performance conditions include absolute total shareholder return, a return on capital employed, and as I've mentioned earlier, a strategic execution objective. The company is not necessarily required to obtain shareholder approval for the issuance of performance rights to CEO, but we're doing so for good corporate governance. The resolution is set out on the slide. And again, I won't read it, but I'll ask whether there are any questions in relation to this item of business.
We have one question on this item from Nationwide Management Consulting. The question is, the target absolute total shareholder return and return on capital employed in the proposed FY21 LTI are aligned with shareholder interests and appear reasonable compared to comparable companies over the long run. However, historical figures show considerable year-to-year variability due to worldwide political, economic and other conditions for which the board or management are not responsible. Of course, this is not to say that windfall gains should not be shared equitably among stakeholders. Some companies set comparative rather than absolute targets where the target is set on a market, industry or other suitable index. Would the chair please comment?
Thank you very much for that question. A couple of things to say about it. We certainly agree that some companies that are impacted by year-to-year variability will often use a relative total shareholder return measure. GrainCorp did for many years, but a couple of years ago, recognizing that there were very few global peers for a company such as GrainCorp, and the same is true for United Malt Limited. There are no other listed significant malting companies with which we can directly compare ourselves. Most of our large peers in the global industry are unlisted, either family companies or cooperatives, agricultural cooperatives, so we don't get any comparative remuneration or performance data from them. So the board has chosen to retain an absolute total shareholder return objective rather than a relative one. And I think this is a sensible policy. In setting what that return should be, we do look at a range of what you might call analogous or comparable industry sectors in the food processing, in the brewing industry, and so on, to see what sensible benchmarks might be for a company, processing companies such as ours, in setting what the actual hurdles should be for our management, and the board has taken a good look at those benchmarks before setting out the objectives for our management in this case. So that is the rationale for us. Now, United Malt should not have quite as much variability in normal years as companies like GrainCorp, which are impacted by weather conditions, droughts and the like. We should be, in normal times, putting aside COVID pandemics, a much more stable and predictable business, and we hope to return to that situation soon. So thank you very much for that question. Are there any other questions?
There are no further questions.
Thank you. So there being no other questions, I'll show the proxies in relation to this resolution, and you'll see that there's about 84% of the votes cast to date have been voted in favour of this resolution. So now, continue with the last of the items of business for this meeting, which is the ratification of the issue of the placement shares. Now, this item is to consider refreshing the company's placement capacity under Listing Rule 7.1, as set out in the explanatory notes to the notice of meeting. As I mentioned, in May 2020, as shareholders know, the company conducted an institutional placement and raised $140 million through an issue of approximately 36.8 million shares at $3.80 per share to institutional and professional investors. Eligible retail shareholders were given an opportunity to invest at the same price through a share placement plan, and that raised a further $30.6 million. So as I've said, on behalf of the board, we thank our shareholders for their strong support of the placement and the share purchase plan. This resolution seeks shareholder approval under the listing rules to ratify the issue of shares under the placement in order to reinstate the company's placement capacity. The resolution is set out on the slide. I'm not going to read it in detail, but basically it refreshes our ability to raise fresh capital up to 15% without having to seek shareholder approval, should an opportunity arise where we might wish to do so. So if anyone would like to ask any question on this item, please submit a question. I'll ask the company secretary whether there are any.
We don't have any questions on this item.
All right, thank you very much. In that case, we'll show the proxies and direct votes received on this item, and you will see on your screens that almost 98% of votes cast to date have been voted in favour of this resolution. So that brings us to the end of the formal business of this meeting. I think you can see that based on the proxy votes and the direct votes cast at the meeting, all the resolutions before this meeting will be passed. But the final results will be, as I mentioned earlier, posted at the ASX website as soon as they're available from our share register later today. So I'd like to confirm there are no further questions that have been received. So that being the case, that completes the discussion of all resolutions. You will have an opportunity, shareholders, if you haven't already voted online, to do so for 5 minutes after the meeting closes, and I'll be closing the meeting in a moment. On behalf of the board, I'd like to thank you all for your participation in our virtual AGM today. I'd like particularly to thank our shareholders and our customers for their support, our executive leadership team and all of our people at United Malt for their contribution over the past year, the company's advisors and our auditors for their support, and Link Market Services for their services here today. So ladies and gentlemen, with that, I now declare the AGM, the first AGM of United Malt Group Limited, closed. Thank you.